Okay, so I think that's working. Okay.
Well, the picture came out this time. You've seen this guy before. This is we had Frankie. This is Stuart Hall, actually looking slightly severe. The quote I've got here is from a book that Stuart. There's actually a bit of this in your story reader. 1964. I'm just trying to think how old Stuart Hall would have been when he wrote this book. I mean, really quite young.
33, 34.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are you a fan then?
No. I remember I was impressed by him.
Yeah. I would have thought so. Certainly something like that. Yeah, I think he was born. Yeah, I have in my head that he was born in 1932. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. Good. Okay. So here, I mean, the reason I'm kind of coming forward to this one is that this was also a book written for schools, written for teachers, right? So we're coming to really the moment of cultural studies in the late 1950s, early 1960s. And we're coming to a point where people are beginning to challenge that culture and society tradition. So Raymond Williams, Richard Hoggart, and slightly later than that, Stuart Hall, all coming along and challenging that Leavisite approach, the notion of culture as a canon of great works. And what they're doing is wanting to pull in popular culture, working class culture. In fact, there's a kind of gradual move that goes on here. So you can see through the 1950s into the 1960s a series of shifts going on. But this book, in some way, kind of encapsulates that. As I say, it was a book written for schools. Stuart Hall eventually, as you will know, became the director of the Birmingham Centre. Paddy Winnell, the co-author, was the head of education at the British Film Institute. And the British Film Institute, set up in the 1950s to promote film culture, is actually a key organisation in terms of the history of teaching about film and media in this country. And what you've got here is a shift going on. There are many things going on around this time. I think it's partly a kind of generational shift, and always with this story there are generational shifts. So you've got a new generation of younger teachers who've grown up with film, and then not so much at this point with television, but certainly grown up with film, who are more responsive to students' interests. You've got also a shift in education. For example, key thing, I think, it would be the raising of the school leaving age, which happened in early 60s, do we reckon? Something like that. I mean, a point where young people, working class young people, very often leaving school at 14 to go into jobs, traditionally at that point into apprenticeships within industry. The school leaving age is raised, and so the idea is that young people are staying in education longer. And this then creates a problem, that we can't simply give them the existing curriculum, and teachers beginning to have to think, well, actually, how do we teach these difficult working class teenagers? You know, how do we give them a curriculum that is relevant to them and their lives? So a bit of a shift going on in terms of education, and I guess also you would have to say a shift going on from the 1950s into the 60s in terms of culture, in terms of particularly popular culture. I think Stuart Hall and Paddy Winnell in this book begin to, I think Elvis appears in this book, I'm not sure if the Beatles appear in this book, but you know, we're talking about a point, certainly television appears in this book, and one of the things that you can see going on here is, on one level, yes, it is about bringing in popular culture into the school, but it's actually quite a gradual process. And as you can see from this quote, what they're doing in a sense is shifting the line. They're not abolishing the line between high culture and popular culture, they're just shifting it. So they're saying, in terms of actual quality, the struggle between what is good and worthwhile and what is shoddy and debased is not a struggle against the modern forms of communication, but a conflict within these media. So this is really, in terms of the aims, it's still about teaching discrimination. But it's discrimination within popular culture rather than, as in the Leavisite mode, discrimination just against popular culture. But you can still see very much at this point, when you go back to this stuff, you go back to Richard Hoggart's uses of literacy, for example, you can see still the discriminatory stance going on. It's very strong, actually, in Richard Hoggart. Richard Hoggart talks about Hollywood, talks about what he calls candy floss culture, you know, popular culture, in this very dismissive kind of way. It's less the case with this book, but nevertheless, it's pretty clear when you're teaching about film, for example. There are certain filmmakers who are approved of and others who are not. You know, we can teach about films with subtitles, preferably, but if they don't have subtitles, then it's the Hollywood auteurs. But it's not mainstream popular cinema. And preferably it's film, you know, television still a little bit of a disapproved topic. I have to say, I was going to give you a chunk from this book as well, and I went to the library and I couldn't find it. And they've chucked it away, the bastards. So if and when I do this talk next year, there will be a chunk of the popular arts. But it's a pity, actually. Andrew and I, this is a trip down memory lane, because I can remember when I trained as a teacher, not in 1964, I should say. I'm not that old, but I was here training as a teacher in the mid 1970s, and I do remember reading this book, actually, the popular arts. Andrew was reading something different, I think. Yeah, see, Andrew's a bit more in a kind of Leavis space than I am. Anyway, so there was the moment of the popular arts. Coming forward now, I hope. And again, sorry, this is what happens when you bring your Mac PowerPoint in and try and put it on here, but there should have been a picture there. We're coming forward again to the 1980s. This is Len Masterman. And the picture was going to be one of Len Masterman's books. This quote is from Teaching About Television, published in 1980. And for me, actually, again, memory lane, you know, going to teach media in schools around this time, this was absolutely the defining book. Again, a longer history, you know, it really comes out of the 1970s, and it's a point where media education, teaching about media, takes on a much more political tone. And in a sense, you can date it back, I guess, it's sort of post-May 1968, it's the left politics of the 1970s. And some of the stuff that you've looked at, actually, in looking at film theory, the journal Screen, which was the key sort of defining journal in terms of establishing film studies as a subject, film theory as a sort of legitimate pursuit in the 1970s. You know, that moment really is key to this. Screen, the journal, was published by something called the Society for Education in Film and Television, which was an organisation funded by the British Film Institute as a kind of cultural vanguard organisation. SEFT, Society for Education in Film and Television, was sort of the cutting edge politically radical organisation. It was Screen, the journal Screen, that really brought in, first translated a lot of the semiotics, structuralism, a lot of the early work on psychoanalysis and film, and then subsequently post-structuralism. All of that stuff was appearing in the pages of Screen in the 1970s. It's really the moment of high theory in film studies. Although, interestingly, SEFT was S-E-F-T, Society for Education in Film and Television. Most of the time during the 1970s, they were talking about education at a university level. But interestingly, SEFT also had an educational role in relation to schools. So alongside the journal Screen, which was publishing all this high theory, you also had a journal called Screen Education, which was trying to suggest some ways in which you might teach about all of this stuff to children in schools. And there's a bit of a kind of hidden history going on with all of this. It's interesting again to kind of look back on. In the end, you know, the teachers in SEFT lost out and the academics really won. And actually, when I was involved with SEFT in the early 1980s, that was what the struggle was all about. You know, it was all these academics kind of making a claim for theory, and the teachers were just hopelessly sort of unglamorous and, you know, not really doing anything politically kind of worthwhile. And certainly nobody would ever talk about teaching There was a lovely article in Screen Education, I think at the end of the 1970s, by Judith Williamson, and she wrote in this article that teaching in screen education was like sex. Everybody did it, but nobody liked to talk about it. Yeah, and a sense that, you know, of teaching is, although, you know, all of these academics were also teaching, but somehow, you know, it was much better to talk about, you know, psychoanalysis and the class struggle than it was to talk about what actually went on in the classroom. Masterman, I think, was really the exception to this, and Masterman was actually quite critical of screen and screen education. I mean, he saw this as just sort of elitist theory, a new kind of elitist theory. But in many ways, a lot of the key ideas, a lot of the ideas that you'll be familiar with coming out of semiotics and structuralism. So, you know, questions about representation, questions about ideology, those are the key issues in terms of Masterman's books. This book, as I said, Teaching About Television, published in 1980, was the key thing, and he talks about television education as a demythologizing process, or elsewhere he talks about demystification, a process which will reveal the selective practices by which images reach the television screen, emphasize the constructed nature of the representations projected, and make explicit their suppressed ideological function. So this is very much, you know, 70s theories of ideology, and again, very much, you know, picking up on what we've been talking about the power of rational analysis. You know, we'll engage in this analysis, we'll look at these selective practices, we'll look at construction, and will somehow uncover the ideology that's hidden underneath. The ideology has been kind of suppressed and hidden away. It's sort of been smuggled in. And if we do this process of rational analysis, we'll expose it, and thereby we'll somehow be free of it. So there's Len. one of my few pictures that did come out. Uncle Len, and as I said, you know, it needs to be seen in this kind of context. What it's doing is partly arguing against the elitism of Leavis, so it's pushing that argument a bit further. But I would not say that Len Masterman was in any way a populist. I mean, Len Masterman's idea is really a model of ideology which is about false consciousness. So the idea is that the media are agents of ideology. The media are bearers of false values, particularly, you know, false political values. He begins to talk about kind of racism and sexism and so on, and various other isms as we get into the 80s. But for Len, it's basically about pretty traditional left politics. Very much this false consciousness view. You know, we're being deluded by the media. We're being tricked. And the aim is demystification. That somehow we'll, through this analysis, we'll set them free. And the pedagogy, well, how would you actually go about doing that? Well, a kind of combination, really, of, on the one hand, semiotics. So you do have people taking some of the semiotic approaches that you've looked at. So, you know, Roland Barthes, for example, is pretty influential here. And this idea of using a semiotic approach to analysis, to analyse, in this case, certainly for Masterman, television. So you do this business. Have you done denotation, connotation, ideology? Yeah, you know, that model of analysis he describes happening in his classrooms. And that, you know, that approach, you know, massive, you still, I mean, people still are still doing this, that kind of 70s semiotics, I would say, you know. Still doing that in media classrooms, although and that's really the little bit I'll show you in a second is taken from Teaching About Television, this book published in 1980. Through the 80s, Len gets more interested in political economy. So the book Teaching the Media, published in 1985, the argument is that we not only do we need to be doing this kind of semiotic analysis, we also need to be giving students information about the media industries and how the industries work and how the money works, the economics of it all. So what you have here then is a combination of semiotics and political economy. And again, it's very much about rationalising pleasure. Pleasure is somehow something that kids need to kind of put aside. You put aside pleasure when you come into the classroom and you engage in rational analysis. And it's through rational analysis that these suppressed, hidden ideologies are revealed. You know, we pull away the veils of illusion and we see things as they really are. The example I'm going to give you is from Teaching About Television, published in 1980. Now we'll have to turn all this off. Yeah, and just for the benefit of the part-timers, yes. So it's based on a bit of classroom work about Top of the Pops. And I should explain that Top of the Pops was a popular, it's no longer on TV, popular, very long-running, pop music show on TV. Every Thursday night, it used to be ritually watched by the youth of Britain.
Coming back for a Christmas special.
Well, there you are then. And this is Len Masterman's account of how he went about teaching this with a class and what happened. What I want you to read is just the section one from here. Interestingly, he puts Top of the Pops together with Gardener's World, which was a TV gardening programme. So I don't want you to read about Gardener's World, just read about Top of the Pops. And again, if you can think about the three questions that I asked before. So, you know, what's the aim? What's the point of it? What is assumed about students' existing knowledge, or if you like, students' existing relationship with Top of the Pops? And how is this attempting to teach? So, again, so start with... So don't read the first paragraph, just read the bit where it starts here, iconographic analysis, okay? And then don't read, when you start reading about how this works, you've read too far, okay? So again, if you'd like to have a look at this and then...